ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Happy Saturday to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Gare Joyce this weekend. Lots to get to. The Raptors lose in Charlotte once again. Blue Jays spring training continues to roll along. Some interesting performances and decisions to be made in the coming weeks before the start of the regular season. And some big moves already in the NFL's offseason, and free agency hasn't even opened up yet. But we start with the National Hockey League. The trade deadline now in our rearview mirror. We have a sense now, with 20 games left to go, the landscape of the National Hockey League, who the contenders are, who the pretenders are. Although there are some question marks in the Eastern Conference at the bottom of the wild card standings. But overall, in an overall sense, gents, considering moves made on Monday, before Monday, has anything changed in your mind, John, as far as who's a Stanley Cup contender? I mean, did the Rangers put themselves on that plane now where they weren't before? Is that the biggest? I mean, it's such a cliche to ask who the winners and losers were of the NHL trade deadline. But has anything in an overall sense changed for you now that the trade deadline's passed?
I would say that Detroit is the what they did with Zdlicky and Cole kind of shores up any depth issues that they had. I mean, the Rangers for me were already a contender in the East as it was, and doing what they did only strengthened that case. I mean, they were in the Stanley Cup final last year, so how you can say with the pretty much the same team, although Rick Nash is better this year than he was last year. So for me, they're a contender. Montreal, as long as Carey Price is healthy, he can win rounds. And you know, Washington is a scary, scary team. You don't want to face them.
Gare, I mean, the Rangers were in the Cup final a year ago. I know they won a game against the Kings, but they were thoroughly outplayed, didn't really have much of a shot in the Cup final. Did, with the addition of Yandle, did they take that next step to being on par with whoever comes out of the West if they're in a Cup final again?
You definitely have a feeling that they're a better team this year with Yandle. And I think they're just they're playing better this year than they did going into last year's playoffs. I think that they and Montreal would be the favorites coming out of the East right now, like a pretty compelling favorite. I'm with John. I think Detroit did well getting those two players, but I just don't have confidence in their goaltending as it stands for them to make a deep run.
And let's not forget, though, as well, in that Stanley Cup final, three of those games went to overtime. So while it was a 4-1 series victory, I mean, it was a lot closer than 4-1. A couple of bounces here and there, and who knows who wins that turn or that.
We don't even know LA's getting in the playoffs at this point.
It's true. I think they could end up with Connor McDavid.
That's right. Well, not quite. But it was a terrible matchup for the Rangers. Like, of the teams that they could have faced in the West, that would be about the worst one. If they had played Chicago, it's a different feel. But just, you know, that heavy game that the Kings had was murder on the Rangers. They might get a more favorable matchup in the final this time.
Even though they're not in the playoffs now, like, in my mind, it's their second wild card spot to lose. I mean, they are a team that we all know can turn it on when they feel the time is right and when the games get big. And, you know, I look who else is there right now. You know, Calgary have been a great story this year, but without their best player, I can't imagine that they're going to be able to keep this up. And, you know, we'll see what Buffalo being out in Winnipeg does. Tyler Myers is going to get a chance to show exactly who he can be for that team over the next few weeks. But for me, it's LA's to lose. The other teams are going to be looking at them, I think, in the next couple weeks.
Well, LA right now just 2 points back of Winnipeg for that final wild card spot, and they do have the game in hand. And how much this landscape changes from one day to the next, the Pacific Division is just all jammed up there. There's so little separating. I mean, second, Vancouver, Calgary tied for second with 76 points. San Jose on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. They're fifth in the division, but only 4 points back of second. So much still to be decided here in the final weeks of the regular season. But let's go back to the Eastern Conference for just a second, and we just kind of touched on the Montreal Canadiens, who met the Rangers in the Eastern Conference final a year ago. And I feel like there's contenders who have goaltending issues, and then there's the Montreal Canadiens who have this incredible goaltender in Carey Price, who's maybe the leader right now for the Hart Trophy. But they have underlying issues, right? Like you talk to the advanced metrics people who say it's difficult to win like this, continually being outshot and relying on your goaltender as much as you can, as much as they do. But when you have an elite level goaltender, maybe it's sustainable, not just in the short term, but in the long term. Garrett, how legitimate cup as far as a cup contender are the Montreal Canadiens?
I give them a pretty decent shot of getting there. I actually think that the Rangers are the better team right now. But if that were to be the conference final, you know, I would give them a shot. I wonder, you know, they were without Galchenyuk for a stretch. I'd be interested to see what their numbers are like with and without him. I think he's like a key guy in their top six, a big hole to fill. But you know, I there's a lot to like about that team. I don't know that what they did on the deadline, getting Petrie, you know, if that's a big step at all. I sort of expected them to do something.
I would argue. I think that they might have won deadline day. I mean, they got Petrie and Flynn and Mitchell to shore up their kind of bottom six for basically a second rounder.
I didn't feel like the bottom six was a big problem, but
well, yeah, but I mean, now they've got guys who fit into that roster philosophy. They're all fast guys, right? That's a speed team, and they've got three more speedy guys, and they basically gave up a second rounder to get them. Now, I mean,
well, they gave up nothing on deadline, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And, you know, the Rangers, yeah, they went out and got Yandel, who might have been the best guy remaining, like who was available on deadline day. But they gave up a boatload, right? I mean, they, you know, they're sacrificing their future for the present. And you got to take your shot when you got it, for sure. But they had to give up a lot to get that guy.
Well, and you look at it, if Braden Coburn is you know, a first rounder, right? Like, that's like such an overpayment. You know, if that were establishing the market, then you know, Montreal getting Petrie is like a quarter on the dollar.
100%, yeah. But I will say, you know, getting back to what we were talking about, the Rangers for me as well are the team to beat in the East right now.
Is Devontae Smith-Pelly just a guy? I mean, he's had some moments in the playoffs, a bigger body. It was kind of flaming out with the Ducks, it seems. A GTA kid. Is he just a guy? Is that a depth thing for the Montreal Canadiens, or does he fill a void there that they needed, Gare?
Third line upside. I mean, I would just put it at that. Nothing more than that. But that's, it might be third line upside, but I think he has a chance to be a pretty good third liner.
Yeah, and we knew that Bergevin, he didn't like Seacatch, right? He wasn't playing him. Yeah. You know, not Bergevin, the coach.
Tarian,
yes. Seacatch was a Bergevin move, a GM move, and Tarian didn't like him, so they got him out of town. You know, it wasn't going to work with the coach that they had right now.
It's interesting that we're talking about the Montreal Canadiens and New York Rangers as the contenders coming out of the Eastern Conference, and why not? I mean, they met in the Eastern Conference final a year ago. But the Islanders right now at this point lead the Metro Division. I get it. The Rangers have three games in hand on the Islanders. But they're the surprise maybe of all of hockey this year. Although we could see it coming a little bit. And John Tavares is in that conversation as far as Hart Trophy candidates. Is this a situation, though, where, John, you've got to see it translate into the playoffs? You've got to see them do it come the spring before you put any faith in them?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of teams that have not done it, just, you know, vaulting into the playoffs and becoming contenders right away. I don't see it with them. I mean, yes, they have Tavares, who very well could win the Hart Trophy and is one of the top kind of five skaters in the league for sure. And they've done well this year, you know, picking up players from other teams who had to get rid of those guys, in, especially with, you know, Boychuk and Letty. But for me, yeah, they're a show me team. They're somebody who I think is first round fodder for a team like the Washington Capitals right now, which if it ended today, that's who they'd be playing. And that would be a nightmare matchup for the Islanders.
But if that is the matchup, you've got two teams with very different histories, I would say. And despite the fact that, yeah, the Capitals will be the underdog in that matchup.
I don't think they are the underdog in that matchup. I think, you know, if you go by points, sure.
Right.
They're the standings underdog, but there's no way that they're the underdog against the Islanders.
Exactly. Well, wouldn't you say that there's more pressure on that team? A team that has not yet fulfilled its potential. They've had this generational talent in Alex Ovechkin, and they've never put it all together come playoff time.
I don't think there's any pressure on that team any more than any other team just because they were so bad last year.
Yeah.
I think the years of them winning President's Trophies and then getting and losing in the first or second round, that's behind that team. That's the early days of Ovi and company, and this is a different team now with a different coach and a different philosophy on the ice. So no, I would think that there isn't a lot of pressure. You could even argue that there's more pressure on the Islanders to win in their final year on the island than there is for the Capitals to win this year.
The hype that the Caps had at, you know, back in the President's Trophy days, and I wrote a book about Ovechkin that season when they folded against the Canadiens, right? And they were like, they were like the Harlem Globetrotters. Like, they were a light show to watch. They were spectacular when they were on. And then flatlining in the playoffs. I get the idea that right now, it's not that they come in under the radar. I mean, they still have Ovechkin. You know, they're still a team to watch. But I feel like there's no pressure on them coming in this year in the way there was when they were coming in as President Trophies winner.
Well, they've got a coach that, I mean, hasn't won a cup, but has a little experience under his belt. And I mean, has that ever happened before in the Ovechkin era? Barry Trotz has come in and done a pretty good job.
No, I mean, they've all been rookie coaches under Ovechkin, or with Ovechkin, right? I mean, Barry Trotz he's an Olympic coach. He's a coach that took a bottom of the barrel cap team to the playoffs on a number of occasions in Nashville. He's respected universally around the league. This is an entirely different situation for all those guys, number eight and everybody else included, to be dealing with and to be taking instruction from.
It's amazing that we've talked about the Eastern Conference now for about 15 minutes, and we haven't mentioned the team that is second in the Atlantic Division and might have, well, the best player in the Eastern Conference outside of Sidney Crosby on their team, and Steven Stamkos, the Tampa Bay Lightning, now sitting on 86 points. 40-20. Is there a reason we haven't talked about this team? Is this a paper tiger to you, Gare?
I have to say I'm not a real believer. They are one when you talk about the Islanders being a show me first. I still feel that way about the Lightning. You can't not like Steven Stamkos. You can't not like the top six that they have going. Bishop, you know, the numbers indicate everything, but you know, it's going to be his first trip through the playoffs, right? He was out last year. Could he do it? You know, maybe. But I don't see them getting by a Rangers team, a Canadiens team.
It's a good test case for, you know, you brought up analytics before. I mean, this is a possession team. Their shooting percentage isn't isn't crazy. You know, they're above 50% Corsi four and all that kind of stuff. And Ben Bishop, in terms of, you know, adjusted save percentage and whatnot around the league, he's on like the second page. So for me, it's, can he step up in the playoffs? Because I think Gare's right. The top six is good. The blue line seems to be pretty good, you know, and they did give up a lot for Coburn, but he's a good depth guy for them. So we'll see if the numbers, the underlying numbers can translate in the playoffs. Again, they're kind of one step above the Islanders for me like at least they made the playoffs last year, but they're still a show me team, and they're not going to match up very well with, you know, with the Rangers or even Detroit.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Annis alongside John Greig and Gare Joyce. Bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, you got the Boston Bruins, who are still now in the playoff picture. They're in that second wild card, but just 2 points up on the Panthers. They do have two games in hand on Florida, but lurking now, just 3 points back, and they played the same number of games as the Boston Bruins. The Ottawa Senators, the Hamburglar, Andrew Hammond, getting it done out of absolutely nowhere. John, is this the best thing for the development of the Ottawa Senators to do what they've done the last few weeks?
This is the worst thing for the development of the Ottawa Senators to do what they've done the past few weeks.
All right. You're pretty decisive about it.
Well, I mean, this is a team that is not going to, even if they made the playoffs, they would just get ripped to shreds in the first round. And, you know, riding a hot goalie, a young, hot, unproven goalie is not the recipe for success. And all it's done is taken them into the middle of the first round of the draft instead of being, you know, much closer to the bottom. And in a top-heavy draft, even though, you know, people do say it's deep, but there are some real talents up top. I mean, you're really shooting yourself in the foot by getting hot towards the end of the season here.
Yeah. Hammond sort of has the feeling to me of Ron Tugnutt Redux, right? Like, but Tugnutt, they pulled out of a fire department, I think. That's where he was going to play next. But, you know what? It's a great story.
That's all it is.
I'm happy for Brian Murray, who's a great guy, you know, what his prospects are going forward, you know, they don't look that good. Life-wise, not team-wise, but, it was sad to watch. You knew that they weren't making a deal on deadline, right? Yeah. They were in ultimate no man's land.
Nobody to give up, right? And nobody, no need to get anybody. So you're right. It's just worst of the middle.
Yeah. They are you a buyer? Are you a seller? You know, I mean, it's...
you're a renter.
Yeah. That's right.
In real estate parlance.
I was going to say you've got a basement apartment.
Yeah. Right?
Well, okay, so if this is horrible for their development, being as close to the playoffs as they are, what does it say about the development of the Florida Panthers, who also have a young team, some young players on that team? They're still very much alive in the Eastern Conference playoff discussion, although they've kind of tripped over their own feet here in recent weeks, but it's just 2 points back of the Boston Bruins. Is that a team that should be looking to make that extra push here in the final couple of weeks of the regular season, Gare?
I just want to find out if they're going to engrave Rob Tallis's name on the cup.
You're right. I mean, he's part of that team. They signed him to a 24-hour contract.
That would have been the greatest thing to happen in the NHL.
Can you imagine anyone having more negotiating position, more leverage
You're
than
right.
he did?
You're right.
Sweeten that, you know, bonuses.
Yeah, he should have really held their feet to the fire. It's amazing that doesn't happen more often. It just takes two injuries to goalies that you would need a third one. I mean, we've seen third goalies come into games. Maybe the odd part of it was that they were playing in hockey purgatory in Sunrise, Florida, right? Like, if that same scenario happens here in Toronto, you just have to swing a dead cat and you hit 20 goalies in the
Air
Canada Center.
It was funny. There were so many empty seats that night.
Yes.
No game, but Florida Panthers game has been watched as much as that one was in the third period. And you're right. The place was dead.
A viral game, right? Like, yes. There were people, you've got to tune in. You've got to see this, right?
Built for Twitter.
Yeah. I was waking up the missus. It's like, I know you don't like hockey. You've got to see this.
Yeah, and here's Al Montoya now out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Unbelievable that he played in that game. It was just incredible, incredible drama. All right, let's go back to the Western Conference.
I would say, though, Ben, the Panthers are the exact opposite of the Ottawa Senators. They're a young team that's already loaded with good young
players. Prospects.
They need to get into the playoffs or to experience a push for the playoffs for their development, unlike Ottawa, which is shooting itself, like I said. But there are so many good players on that team. That's why they went out and get Jágr at the deadline, because he's the ultimate veteran who can show these kids how to be a pro, how to prepare for games, and what you got to do to make to take that next step.
I hope he plays forever, never retires. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. So out in the Western Conference, Nashville Predators, who I guess along with the Islanders, one of the surprises of the NHL season so far, but they've stumbled recently. Losers of five straight. They are still atop the Central Division.
When was the last time Leafs fans were cheering for Nashville Predators losses? That's what
right.
I want to know.
It's a good question. even if they do end up winning that Central Division, they get a matchup maybe against the Kings, right? Like, that's a scary matchup for the Nashville Predators. They add Cody Franzen in a trade with the Maple Leafs. It's a good defensive core. They play good defensive hockey. Is anybody buying on the Nashville Predators, though, as a cup contender or even a Western Conference finalist, Gare?
I've done it before, and I won't do it again. You know, like, I have bought into the Predators in different seasons. You know what? I just never feel that good about their top six. You know, they Barry Trotz got it done with smoke and mirrors and defense and goaltending. Are you going to look to Philip Forsberg to you know, carry the torch? I'm really not sure. Rene, you know what? You're gonna be in games as long as you're in the playoffs. But I think you're going to find a way to lose those 2-1 games.
Yeah, I mean, that's arguably the best blue line in hockey, right?
Yeah.
With a, you know, probably the Norris Trophy favorite right now in Shea Weber. And probably the second best goalie in the world right now. But you got to win games like 1.5-1 if you're that team, right?
Yeah.
Because once the playoffs roll around and things tighten up a little bit, you're in really tough to score. Really tough.
Yeah, they are. And I guess it's shown recently in losing five straight. Over in the Pacific Division, mentioned how jammed up it is. We're Vancouver in second with 76 points, and the Sharks on the outside of the playoffs looking in with 72. What'd you make of their deadline moves? Because they're kind of in a weird stage of their development, too. I mean, Joe Thornton's still on this team. The captaincy stripped away from him. And we know that the playoff failures are a big part of their franchise history. Great regular seasons. This is not one of them. But where are they? I mean, are they kind of stuck in the middle when you look at a team that is now on the outside of the playoff picture looking in, where you don't know whether you should be completely tearing it down? You want to hand the reins over to the younger players on that team, but the older players are still there, John.
I would have been interested to know if they went to Thornton and Marleau again and asked if they would be traded, if they'd waive those no trades, because those were the guys, if you do want to kickstart any kind of rebuild in San Jose, those are the guys who would fetch you what you were looking for. You know, they're a team kind of stuck, like you said, on the precipice of the playoffs. Are they in? Are they out? Probably not going to get in. It would have been really interesting to see. Imagine if those guys came into play on Monday. That would have been something to see for sure.
I don't think that Doug Wilson has said that he won't go ask them, right? But like, I think Sportsnet should have asked them, right? Just to liven up the deadline show. Like that would have been that would have been news, and you know, that would have happened. Something would have happened.
Yep.
But in some ways, they're like the bizarro world version of the Senators, in that they're neither fish nor fowl. You know, like,
they've got way better players.
Yeah, but where the Senators have some young guys who are emerging. On the other side, you've got the Sharks, who have guys on the downside of their careers or on the way up.
Well, you've got Couture and Pavelski, right? I mean, they are better than any young guys on Ottawa emerging or having emerged already.
Yeah, I don't think of Couture as a young guy. I think of him as an established player.
Yeah, okay.
And you talk about blowing it up and stripping it bare and rebuilding. It's, I mean, we talk about it as being this one way of doing things, and whether it works out for the best is a different matter, but it's seemingly, it takes at least more than 1 year. But what the hell's going on in Calgary right now? Because we were waiting for the the tail off. And there was a moment there in the regular season where they had a big losing streak, fell out of the playoffs. They're right back in there. And now without Mark Giordano for the rest of the season, how are they getting it done? Is this the best thing for their development? Is there a downside to making the playoffs if you're the Calgary Flames?
They had to know that Giordano was out for the season when on trading deadline. For them to be sellers, to take futures, you know, if they had any notion that they were going to win these two games this week, like I'm sure that they just thought it's all going to come apart and fold and break down.
But
they could have gone out and got bodies.
They showed patience, that's for sure. I mean, I think they know even if they do make the playoffs, they're not a contender. And that's not something that a lot of GMs or a lot of front offices would do. I mean, Brian Burke, for instance, has showed he hasn't had patience in the past. So for them to go out and, like you say, be sellers, pick up some futures instead of trying to, you know, find a piece to fill in on D or whatever, I think was a smart move. And I don't know how much they look at underlying numbers there, but it's a smoke and mirrors team that gives up way too many shots and rides a ridiculous shooting percentage and has, you know.
Brian Burke's still there, right? So probably not. They probably don't look a lot at the Atlanta.
I don't know how
stats.
Any team doesn't at least pay attention to them and have, you know, and look at them. I mean, it's information. That's all it is. It's
right.
A different type of information other
but there's
than the
numbers,
eye test.
Scary numbers.
I know, but it's 2015. If you don't have at least somebody, you know, in your ear with some underlying numbers these days in the NHL, then you don't even have a scapegoat, right?
Like, right.
So then it's all on you and your eye test. So they must have. And even by the eye test, you can tell they're being outshot and they're being very opportunistic. And it's led to a bunch of wins, especially early in the season, which is probably why they're still where they are today, because of a hot start, not because of consistent play all year long. So good on them for not jumping the gun. I mean, I don't think they're going to make it anyways. So sorry, Calgary.
Yeah, it's funny in talking about Burke being in Calgary. Is Goudreau just about the opposite of everything that Burke promised Toronto fans?
But, yeah.
And I mean, I pull for Calgary just because they're fun to watch. And I don't know that there's anyone who's been more fun to watch this year than Goudreau.
And I think this is good for their development, right? I mean, they've got young guys on the roster right now who are playing in a playoff race. And, you know, the only other guy that they really have in the pipeline is Sam Bennett, who just got back on the ice, and I think he's got like 8 points in his first four or five games with Kingston, so he's looking like he might be back to where he was when he got hurt in the first place. But all their best young players are playing for them right now, so much like Florida, good for them to experience what it's like to be in a playoff race.
Brad Treliving probably going to be in the discussion for GM of the year. Is Tim Murray
in
the discussion for GM of the year, John? I hate the stupid draft lottery. It's the system in which we exist, and that being said, I guess it's hard to argue with what he's done.
He won't be in any serious discussion of the draft for GM of the year, but since this is not a serious show, we can have it. And yes,
yeah.
I think nobody has orchestrated their team or orchestrated more for their team's needs than Tim Murray has this year. He's even trading away any number one goalie, number one in quotation marks on his team, who shows any kind of ability to win games, that guy's out of there. So, yes, for me, Tim Murray has done what he set out to do and planned to do, which is get Connor McDavid in the draft. He also swung the biggest deal of the year in picking up Evander Kane, who, I mean, honestly, if you're a fantasy player right now, if you can get Evander Kane on the cheap, get him and keep him, because he's going to be playing on the wing with Connor McDavid. He could have 40 goals next year, and he's out of Winnipeg where he didn't want to be in the first place.
Yeah, he gets to go to Buffalo. Whoop-de-doo.
I just wish there were a 24/7, you know, for the chase for number one.
Yes,
that would be, and you know, without going into too much detail, I can tell you that as screwy as things are on the ice with the Sabres, things are crazy off the ice with them as well. And eventually the story will be told. But, you know, I look at what and you know, talking about the chase for number one. One team that's in the picture is Phoenix, right? And I loved what they did on the deadline.
Yeah.
Like, that is crazy.
They know what they're doing, too.
Oh my God.
Yep.
That was, I think that was the best player who moved on the deadline by far. If you're taking big picture.
Fair enough.
Yeah, who's not looking forward to seeing Max Domi and Anthony Duclair hooking up again too?
If Max makes it, I don't know yet. I'm
really?
Not sold. I don't know. I mean, but I don't know that he makes it as like a top six guy. I mean, I think he's got some developing to do before he can jump into a lineup like that. Whereas Duclair, because of his size and speed and whatnot, can do it maybe probably next year.
So plenty more to still play out here in the final few weeks of the NHL regular season. Just about 20 games to go for all those teams. When we come back, Raptors lose 103-104 in Charlotte to the Hornets. It's their eighth straight loss in Charlotte, sixth straight to the Hornets/Bobcats franchise overall, and some concerning numbers concerning the two guards chucking up a whole bunch of shots. We'll talk about what's gone wrong with the Raptors and losing 7 of their last 8. That's coming up next. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sportsnet Magazine's 25 greatest NHL games of all time is like nothing you've experienced before. A fully interactive magazine planned and executed entirely as a digital adventure. It's available free to everyone with a tablet or phone. We polled NHL insiders, historians, and fans to reach our definitive ranking. These are the iconic moments, epic comebacks, massive brawls, marathon games, and legendary performances that live in hockey lore. To get the 25 greatest NHL games of all time, find us on Next Issue or download the Sportsnet Magazine app from iTunes and Google Play. Then, start swiping your way through history.
Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I am Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Gare Joyce. Raptors lose yet again in Charlotte. Man, they can't win in Charlotte. 103-94 last night, dropping to 38-24. Third now in the Eastern Conference. They've lost 8 straight in Charlotte, 6 straight against the Hornets/Bobcats organization. They only shot 40.7% from the field while allowing the Hornets to shoot almost 50%. And, gents, I think there's a couple of alarming things here now as the Raptors have lost 7 of their last 8. Kyle Lowry returns to the lineup. Terrence Ross also returning to the starting 5. But the two guards combining for 48 shots, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. Now, they also accounted for 55 points of the Raptors 94, and the bench wasn't very good either. But Gare, we're talking about a backcourt duo that was regarded, especially early this season when they got off to that hot 13-2 start, we thought was one of the best in the NBA. I mean, to be fair, they haven't played like that recently.
They might have read too much of their own clippings.
Maybe.
It is strange. This team was more than the sum of its parts in the first half of the sked, and in recent days they've been a lot less than the sum of their parts. And you know what? It doesn't feel like DeRozan has really, he hasn't been the same player since coming back from the the injury. And Lowry had to shoulder so much of a burden and played so well for so long. But you know what? It's obviously taken its toll, and I don't know that 3 games of rest or trying to balance that, I don't know that you can make a move that can fully bring his game back to where it was.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at this team and the way that they're playing, when they were 15 games over .500, they were sharing the ball a lot. You know, there was scoring coming from everywhere, and that's why, you know, DeRozan was only averaging like 18-something a game instead of, you know, being over 20 like he has been in the past couple of years. So, I mean, and now there's no ball movement. It's like Rudy Gay's back on this team. I mean, it's stopping with those two guys, with D'Ro and Lowry, and they're jacking up a lot of shots. And, you know, if Lowry wasn't like 5-for-9 from 3 last night, you know, his night would have been abysmal.
Yes.
I think he's 2-for-13 or something like that from 2 points. So you got to get back to what got you there. And I think obviously the DeRozan injury when he went down, that they had, like you said, Gare, they had to rely on Lowry to be the man. And we all thought there were some encouraging signs there of seeing some other guys emerge. But now that they're both back, it's like, you know, they both want to take a lot of shots and everybody else isn't getting their touches. And it's really screwing this team up.
Yeah, it's bizarre as well, because you've got a couple of guys in Amir Johnson and Jonas Valanciunas who are fourth and fifth, respectively, in the NBA in field goal percentage. They had a combined 8 field goal attempts yesterday. Jonas Valanciunas played only 23 minutes. That was the fewest of all 5 starters. And post-game yesterday, Dwayne Casey commented on Jonas's lack of offensive touches.
Trying to find something for him. And again, we were double-teaming. We were in scramble mode once they got going. That hurt us from keeping him in. Again, probably should have got him back in, but I just thought the scramble group, Amir, Pat, JJ, was going to give us a little bit more speed and quickness. But it totaled us on the boards.
All right, so that's not the first time this season we've heard, oh, yeah, we got to get Jonas some touches. Yeah, oh, I should have brought him in. Yeah. Late in games, maybe we'll try Jonas Valanciunas. It just hasn't happened. It's baffling for a lot of Raptor fans, and especially when you consider the fact that he's done a good job when given the opportunity on the offensive end. Garrett, who do we blame for this? Because I've heard the argument that you can blame Valanciunas a little bit too, because he needs to demand the ball a little bit more. But I mean, the head coach is the head coach and the point guard is the point guard, and he's touching the ball on every offensive possession. We got to blame somebody. So blame someone, Gare.
I usually like to put things on players.
Yeah.
I would put this on Casey in this instance. I think that he has to, you know, give Lowry, Vasquez, whomever, and really everyone in the lineup a nudge and say, look to this guy. It must be, you know, awfully frustrating for JV to be in the position he is. I'll say, you know, 2 years ago, where did you think JV was going to be at this point? You thought he'd be more of a player than he is right now. And it's a question of not just aren't they utilizing him well, you know, on a game-to-game basis, but are they in any way impairing or delaying or, you know, stalling his development? I always expected he'd be more of a more significant contributor. And in part, it's that he's not getting opportunities in game, but it's also a cumulative thing.
You need to get the ball down low to JV or whoever's on the court just to switch it up a little bit, to show some different looks. I mean, this team is becoming a one-on-one team. It's D-Ro and Lowry trying to break you down and sometimes get to the net or sometimes pull up for jumpers. But, you know, if you can shut those guys down, and I mean, no, there was talk that it was on Golden State's whiteboard the other night was, you know, this is a one-on-one team, play some strong D. And what happens? Golden State crushes them, yeah. Right? I mean, you've got to be able to adapt both in-game, but in the season, if it's not working, if you've lost 7 of your last 8 or 9 or whatever the Raps are on right now, you got to switch it up, and you can't just keep going with the same plays, with the same schemes out there every game.
And what we keep hearing is that come playoff time, basketball changes so much that it is so much more a half-court game, that it is so much more about getting your big men involved. If that's the case, and we understand that, no, the regular season isn't meaningless, but there are things that you can work on during the regular season, because you know you're going to finish top 4 because you're winning the Atlantic Division, so you're guaranteed a top 4 seed. You're going to have a first-round home court advantage in the playoffs. If you're resting Kyle Lowry for 3 games and you understand that there's part of this regular season is learning and growing and getting to that perfect position come playoff time, shouldn't there be more of an emphasis? I mean, isn't all of this leading to, hey, we should start giving the ball to Jonas Valanciunas because we know we're going to need him come playoff time? And we saw it in last year's playoffs. He was more involved in the offense.
Yeah, and they did it the other night against Cleveland, right?
Right.
I mean, JV was part of that game in a way that he hasn't been for much of the year. But the question is consistency. I mean, you got to get it to him. I think night after night, you got to see what he can do. You know, and what happens in that game? They come back from 20 points down and they take a lead in the fourth quarter. Now they lost by 8 or 9 or whatever it was, but that's, you know, they lost to LeBron in the fourth quarter, right?
And he's pretty good.
He's okay.
Yeah.
And but JV was a man amongst boys a little bit that night and showed the kind of potential everybody thought or everybody thinks he has and the kind of player he can be in this league.
And I think that's what's so frustrating to Raptors fans is that he can show it at times just given the opportunity and he can't pass it to himself. And for whatever reason, it's just not happening.
Yeah. I mean, he's young still and he's a big man. So, I mean, that they're like defensemen in the NHL that they take the longest to develop unless you're looking at an Anthony Davis or something. So it's not surprising that there'd be some inconsistency. It's surprising that he doesn't get the opportunity more to show that or prove that maybe he's not as inconsistent as you might think.
The Raptors have been here before. They've slumped and they've gotten out of it. And it wasn't that long ago that they had won 3 straight headed into the All-Star break against the Clippers, Spurs, and Wizards, and then came out of the All-Star break and put a hurting on the Hawks by 25 points. But since then, 7 of 8 losses, dropping to 3rd in the Eastern Conference. When we come back, Blue Jays back in action in spring play today, and you can hear it right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. How hard is it to catch a knuckleball? Apparently pretty difficult. Will Russell Martin be able to do it? We'll discuss. Plus, Daniel Norris. Did you hear he lives in a van in the offseason? You may have. Hard to go a day without hearing that story. But Gare has had multiple conversations with the Blue Jays' vaunted rookie lefty. So
my kindred spirit.
He's your kindred spirit because...
My spirit animal.
You live in a van as well, Gare. We know that. All right, so we'll talk a little Blue Jays coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside John Gregg and Gare Joyce on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
She keeps a Moët Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Anthony Cage, she says, just like Marie Antoinette.
What are you laughing at?
If that's not a baseball song, then I don't know what is.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Queen. Man, you know Freddie Mercury was a huge baseball fan. Everybody knows that.
He had an awesome slider.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis. He is John Gregg alongside Gare Joyce as well as the Blue Jays continuing spring action this afternoon, a game you can actually hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan on the road. In Clearwater, I believe, is where the Phillies play, taking on the Phillies. And as you heard in the update, Josh Donaldson in the lineup, as is Justin Smoak, Dalton Pompey in there too. And Mark Burley going to get the start on the hill. There's a couple of different storylines this spring training. I love spring training for multitude of different reasons, even though it is like probably 2, 3, 4 weeks too long. Everybody has hope. Even Russell Martin has hope that he can catch a knuckleball. R.A. Dickey has hope that he can catch it, although I wonder how legitimate his hope is. The Blue Jays certainly are going to give him a shot. Everything we've heard is that, yeah, he's doing a pretty good job. He's showing some promise. It's not an abject failure yet. We are just 1 week into the experiment, or two if you want to consider the workouts they had before games actually started. But it does kind of seem eerily familiar to a couple of years ago when J.P. Arencibian not only caught R.A. Dickey during the Grapefruit League, but I believe he went to Nashville and worked out with Dickey before spring training even got underway. And that experiment lasted about 5 innings in the home opener with about 3 pass balls. And never again did we see J.P. Arencibian catch R.A. Dickey. This team looks a whole lot different if it has to carry Josh Toley, John. How important is this that the Blue Jays figure it out with Russell Martin and Ari Dickey?
It's very important. I mean, we saw yesterday Martin dropped, I think, six pitches in,
kept him in front of two innings.
Yeah, for sure. So he's already better than JP was.
Right.
But, I mean, Russell Martin, I mean, is a JP Arencibia could not even dream of being the receiver that Russell Martin is. So,
correct.
I mean, I have faith in the idea that Russell Martin will figure it out. I mean, he needs to get used to it, right? I mean, he needs to get used to Dickey's knuckler and know, like, when it comes off at this angle, it's going to likely do this. So I got to be ready for it. And, I mean, it's really early. You know,
That's a refrain Blue Jays fans love to hear. It's early.
I know. But, I mean, there's just something about having a guy on your roster who only does one thing every 5 days and he's taking up a roster spot that really kind of gets me in the gut. I mean, it's just... You need so much more and you need so many things to go right. And when you got somebody who can't hit and all he can do is catch a knuckleball, it's tough for me to.
I can't see Toley in coming north with the team. I can't see it.
You got to give Martin a chance to be that guy, right?
For what you're paying him. You can't say, you know what, we're going to let you be a spectator every fourth or fifth day.
Yeah.
But if you can't do it, you have no choice. I mean, you can't go every 5 days and then on that fifth day you get four, five, six pass balls every R.A. Dickey start.
Well, that's the thing is, does R.A. Dickey, does he need a personal catcher? And if so, is, you know, 220 innings and a 3.8 ERA, is that worth two roster spots? I mean, if this team's going to be good this year, if they're going to make the playoffs, unless Dickey gets back to, like, Cy Young form, he's not your most important pitcher. Is it worth taking up the roster spots just for that one guy? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, were they going to take three catchers north? I mean, that's crazy in this day and age.
There's at least a significant, if not a quantum difference between Martin and Arencibia.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if you get down to dollars, there's a quantum difference.
Yeah. Arencibia couldn't catch, like, period, right?
Yes.
So, I mean... Yes, he couldn't receive Dickey's knuckleball, but, you know, he couldn't do much of anything behind that plate. So equating the two is a little bit apples and oranges for me.
Yeah, it is, but it seems like catching the knuckleball is almost a different thing than catching anything else, right? Like it's almost you're not even a catcher at that point. You're a blocker. Yeah, you're a blocker. You're using a different glove. You're angling your body a different way. Part of it is also the relationship that Toley and Dickey have as far as pitch calling. And I feel like, John, you're underselling Dickey a little bit. He had a very good season last year and maybe was their most important starter all season long last year.
You can argue that, sure. I'm just saying for this year, you need one of the young guys, or if not two of the young guys, to step up if this team's gonna again, you know, make the playoffs for the first time since in 22 years or whatever it is. So in that way, I mean, yes, Dickey is super important if he goes 21-7 with a 2.3. I mean, sure. But if he's going to go 12-13 with a 3.8, and you know, you need like Hutchinson to step up. You need Stroman to step up. You need still 200 innings from Dickey and 200 innings from Burley. But unless one or two of those guys does, I mean, he becomes less important. And this is a team that banked in the offseason on its offense.
Yes.
This is arguably the top five hitters in this lineup are arguably the top five hitters in any lineup in baseball. So how much a knuckleball pitcher is going to matter, I just don't know. I think they got enough problems in the field that they need to have the extra bodies around.
I think they're going to run Martin out there until he proves he can't do it.
If it's a disaster, it's a disaster, and you rethink it later on, but you give your prized offseason acquisition a chance to do what he's supposed to do, which is catch like 150 games a year.
And, you know, I was down in spring training last week from the opening and watching that first session, just like playing catch, Russell Martin and R.A. Dickey. Like, honest to God, it was maybe the most intensely scrutinized baseball moment in recent Toronto baseball history.
It's got to be weird for Josh Toley too, right? Because he's giving Russell Martin tips on how to catch the knuckleball. He is literally looking at a guy who can take physical money out of his pocket.
Yeah, and I don't mean to slag Josh Toley. I mean, he's an artist in what he does best. And he's By all accounts, he's a really good teammate. I mean, he sits, he's at least at spring training, he's sitting beside Donaldson.
Good interview, too. Talks after every game.
He's chatty. He's fun to be around. He's like a he's a bright light in the clubhouse when it comes to, you know, the team in general and the culture in there. And
if your specialty is catching a knuckleball, you better be able to talk as well.
Yeah.
You're a two-tool player.
It's the same way a goon in hockey, right? He better be a good dude.
And he better be looking towards setting a tone with the media so that he can become a member of the media soon enough. As soon as R.A. Dickey retires, I'm sure Josh Tolley's looking at the second career that he's about to have.
Sportsnet will grab him as an analyst for every fifth game.
Right. I mean, the baseball media is littered with former catchers. So if he's, I guess a lot of this all depended on Deonner Navarro and whether they were able to trade him out of town. Now it's getting late in the going here, and we're less than a month now away from the start of the regular season. So I think it's safe to say that we can count on him being a member of this Blue Jays team, at least to start the season, which means, yeah, if Tolley's on this team, that's three catchers on this team. And it likely means that you lose one of those bats that, well, I don't know how much Justin Smoke's able to give you. I know he can't give you anything if he's not on this team. And if Josh Tolley's on it, it probably means that a guy like Justin Smoke isn't on it. And as much as, John, you said it, I mean, this team is going to be predicated on how well the offense does. If you have to give up a bat like that, if you have a very limited supply of DH bats and bench bats because you have to carry three catches, that's a big problem too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you got to be able to give guys a rest too, right? I mean, Smoke needs to play first base. You don't want to be shuffling Bautista in to play first base instead of right field because Edwin needs a day off, or God forbid Edwin gets hurt again. I mean, it's just when you keep Tolley, your options are just so much more limited throughout the diamond. Now, who's going to play second base for this team? And what if that guy goes cold for four games and you want to put somebody else in? Who's the backup there? I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's a real conundrum because, you know, you need to be able to catch a knuckleball. You probably don't want to piss off Dickey, but really, is it really worth it? I just don't know.
The other storyline that's pretty prevalent this spring training is the Aaron Sanchez starter reliever thing. He had his first appearance in spring training. Didn't go so well. It was his first appearance, and, you know, he was victimized a little bit by an error behind him and maybe a non-call on a should-have-been strike three. But he stubs his toe a little bit here in spring training. How much of a look, Gare, do you think this team is going to give Aaron Sanchez as a starter? Or in their mind, do you think they've already looked at how weak the bullpen could be without him, and especially if this Brett Cecil shoulder thing is anything, how much of an opportunity are they going to give Aaron Sanchez to be a starter come the start of April, or they've already, in their minds, do you think, put him in the bullpen?
I think he's in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Cecil situation, going from stomach flu to sore shoulder, in the course of a week. I don't know how that works out, but I think that they've made that commitment. Their bullpen is so unsettled. I'm going to be interested to see where Delabar is. He talked about having such a great off season working out. I know he was saying that he had put weight on. I was taking a good look at him. I thought, you know, like, I'm trying to figure out if that's useful weight that you've put on there. It's so unsettled. I think Sanchez is down with the idea of being out there. I don't know about the idea of it crimping his development or anything like that. And it might end up being the place where he should be in the long run. We don't know.
Well, that would be a disappointment, right? I mean, if Sanchez ends up being your closer, even if it is for a decade, I mean, that's not what everybody's excited about, is it?
No, it's definitely as much as this era of baseball really does value the save and the big fireballing closer, there's more value in a guy who can throw 200 innings. But I don't think the jury is out yet on whether he can do that, right? Yeah, no. We've never seen that.
If I'm the Blue Jays this spring, I stretch him out. I pretend he's going to be in the rotation. I see what falls off the scrap heap from other teams. I see who's left out there as a free agent. I see what I've got in the guys I've already got in Dunedin. And then the worst case for me is Sanchez ends up as your closer. And he showed last year he can go from starter to closer like that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about him, you know, needing innings, you know, late innings in spring to be able to go in the ninth and save a game. What I want to do is see what he can do, you know, pitching five or six innings in the spring, four or five innings.
I thought the idea of him starting the opening game in spring training was one of the great head fakes of all time.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, it was kind of interesting.
We gave you a start.
Yeah. Maybe that's the only one. And you can go the other way, right? If you stretch him out, you can easily throw him in to a reliever role immediately.
100%.
The opposite is not true. You can't have him as a reliever and then stretch him out. He's going to need a couple of weeks. He would need to go back down to the minor leagues before he's able to come back up and throw 80, 90, 100 pitches. A lot of this is also predicated on what Daniel Norris does this spring. And if you haven't heard, he lives in a van in the off season. He goes surfing. Man, you can't
sustainable
turn on
lifestyle.
You would have heard it about, I don't know, 8 months ago, yeah, if you had read Sportsnet magazine.
That's
and
right.
A story by,
yeah,
Garrett Joyce.
There,
but everybody else has jumped on the bandwagon now.
Garrett, you're on the leading edge of this Daniel Norris thing. You discovered him. Does he ever give you credit for that?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And we're tight. We message each other. We text. You know, when he's...
He has a phone despite living in
an old... I think it's solar-powered or something like that.
Yeah.
No, Daniel... It's funny because Daniel Norris, the story, Daniel Norris, the lifestyle, has completely eclipsed Daniel Norris, the pitcher. Mm-hmm. Like, you hear almost nothing about that in this great run that he's had through, you know, the media car wash, right? He's... doing the Today Show, doing ESPN, you know, when they're writing about him when there's no games being played, you know. And I love this idea, you know, they've been pumping how he's a surfing dude. You know what? He was rehabbing his elbow in the off season. He wasn't surfing. He was in Johnson City, Tennessee. I think my gut tells me that he's going to be in Buffalo at the start of the season. I know that that's sort of a minority opinion, but I think that would be the best place for him.
Well, then who's your fifth starter? If you've got Sanchez in the bullpen and you've got Norris in AAA.
I'm thinking that they're going to break with four starters at the start of the year.
They could do that. I mean, there's enough off days at the beginning of the season. They could do that. Seems, though, a little curious to do that early in the season because we know starters are on such limited pitch counts to open up the season. You rarely see guys throw 100 pitches in their first starts in April. Usually you have to wait until late April, early May before guys are stretched out to that degree. I know they could do it. I don't know if I've heard Alex Anthopoulos talk about the possibility of doing that. That would definitely solve your bench problem too if you have to bring Josh Toldy north.
Yeah, I mean, don't you have to break with five? And don't you want Norris to be one of those five? I mean,
he's coming off of surgery. Let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, but I mean, just to get fans riled up again. You know, we got this top five in the batting order. And, oh, yeah, look at the young guys we have in our rotation to complement the old guys we have in our rotation. I mean, you're going to
be like
a
microbus tailgate outside of Rogers Center.
You're going to win with the young guys. Yeah. I mean, they're your future for sure, and arguably your present. So, you know, for me as a fan, I want to see them. I don't want to hear about Daniel Norris's exploits in Buffalo, striking out 10 and three times in a row.
I'm just thinking that it would be for a couple of starts.
Yeah,
that's what I'd like to see. I don't know, but then again, I'd like to have seen him keep his beard. You know? How does a 21-year-old guy grow a beard like that? It was crazy, right?
Yeah, he's got more testosterone than me.
Because, Ben, you'd know better than me. Who are the options?
Well, your other options, I mean, here's what I see happening, and here's what I think the Blue Jays, their perfect scenario is Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen, not because he is a poor performer this spring or anything other than they just need the arm in the bullpen. And Daniel Norris starting the season as that fifth starter, while Johan Santana miraculously has his left shoulder stay attached to his body. He turns into something. The Blue Jays gladly pay him the $2.5 million to be on the 25-man roster. He turns into that fifth starter maybe the second, third week of the season. Norris goes back down to AAA as your sixth starter insurance policy. Because here's the thing. Last year, the Blue Jays were extremely lucky as far as health from their starting five. As soon as Marcus Stroman got to the major leagues, they really didn't miss many starts, whereas a couple of years ago was the complete opposite. So, I mean, these things work in waves, right? I tend to think so.
I haven't seen the analytics.
It's going to be a wave for sure if you break camp with Johan Santana in your rotation.
Well, there's a wave Daniel Norris is grabbing.
because everybody knows Tennessee is the hotbed of surfing. But I think it's foolish for the Blue Jays to believe that they'll be able to go again a whole season needing just six starters. They're going to need 7, 8, maybe 9. And I know they have the Jeff Francises of the world, the Liam Hendrixes hanging around. But
who was the actor who played Ed on NBC? Remember that comedy series, Ed?
I don't know who
Jeff
that was.
Jeff Francis is such a ringer for him. I have to look that up in the
Greg,
break.
Greg,
the guy's
look that
from
up.
Kingston,
I'm on it.
Right?
But
I think you were the only guy that saw that show.
It was fantastic. David Letterman produced it.
It's Tom Cavanagh.
Tom Cavanagh. He's a ringer for him.
That would be a good story to see Jeff Francis back in the major leagues, but I don't think he has any illusions at 34 and throwing about 85. He's just a fringy guy hanging on right now. But you're going to need a bunch of starters.
But they don't have any. They've got five,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Six if you include Sanchez. So if you're banking on needing a bunch of starters, then you're going to have to go find some because they're not here right now.
Yeah, and maybe Roberto Osuna by the end of the season has shown something in the minor leagues, but there's question marks, no question about it. One of those is the bullpen I mentioned. It was so down a year ago. Steve Delabar goes from being an all-star, the write-in ballot guy, the extra guy that everybody voted on, to being down in AAA last year. Could not find the strike zone. Seems like a pretty important guy when it comes to the fortunes of this bullpen, whether he can figure it out this year. Also, Miguel Castro, a guy maybe doesn't have the hype of Daniel Norris. He needs to figure out something like a van. I don't know. He needs to live
ride
on a skateboard.
Bicycle to the
yeah.
ballpark.
I don't know. But everything I keep hearing about Miguel Castro, Gear, is that he could be a guy that has an outside chance of breaking camp with this team.
I remember seeing him in the Gulf Coast League.
Yeah.
Like when I was down August 2013, just when he first arrived in rookie league. And he's a physical freak. I think they have to be terrified that that his body will not hold up as hard as he throws.
Really?
Like, it's crazy. You know, he will touch 100, you know, and maybe more. And he's physically not a mature looking guy. He looks like a candidate for Marfan syndrome, right? Like he can scratch his ankles without bending over, right? Like he is a physical freak, but
he's the Gumby of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know what I think we've realized though in baseball, and people talk about rushing your prospects, and he is only 20 years old. I think the rash of Tommy John injuries in previous years and understanding that maybe the lifespan of a pitcher isn't as long as we once thought. Tim Lincecum, I mean, seems like he was
I think their lifespan is fine,
yes,
right?
Their careers just don't last as long. They don't drop dead when
no.
they can't throw
yeah.
a baseball anymore.
That's right.
But it's maybe not the worst thing in the world to rush these guys to the major leagues because you might only have them for 2-3 seasons before their arm explodes. So maybe that's an argument in favor of bringing Miguel Castro north.
I would take a Tim Lincecum type guy who wins, like, what, 2 Cy Youngs and has
right.
2 or 3 World Series titles mm-hmm. under his belt. I mean, that's what we want. I don't care if this guy doesn't last for 12 years and has a Hall of Fame career. I just need somebody to help us win right now and
sort
get us
becoming,
to the playoffs this season.
Sort of becoming like running backs are in the NFL.
Yeah.
And like replaceable, disposable.
And I don't want to be, like, super short-sighted about it, but if you need help now, you got to go with what you got. And unless you're going out and making moves and maybe Navarro turns into a, you know, a back of the rotation starter, or you're the reliever that you're missing, just bring them. Let's see what they got.
Well, and I, you know what? I think Alex Anthopoulos has been pretty, pretty open to the possibility of advancing prospects that have shown the ability to do so. Dalton Pompey was in single A last year, ended the season in the major leagues, and now all of a sudden, I mean, it seems like a shoe-in to be the starting center fielder on this team. So he's shown that he's not afraid of speeding up the process of getting to the major leagues for some highly touted prospects. So, I mean, if that's the case, I kind of think that Miguel Castro has a good shot of being on this team. What about Ricky Romero? We haven't heard much about Ricky Romero, although he is now engaged to Carl Lang. He's not in major league camp. He's rehabbing a knee in minor league camp, and they've given his 24 away. Somebody else is wearing Ricky Romero's 24. It's amazing. I mean, talk about the lifespan, sorry, pitching span. Career span of a pitcher in the major leagues. His could be done. This is the last year of that deal. He's making $7.5 million this year. I believe there's a $500,000 buyout at the end of the year. But this could be it for Ricky Romero as far as his major league career.
I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we talk about Santana as a reclamation project. We could be sitting here in 3 years' time and someone has salvaged Ricky Romero and, you know, he's found a second life. He's reinvented himself. But to me, yeah, it's strictly past tense.
I mean, the difference between those two is that Santana did it at the major league level for an extended period of time.
And it was injuries,
right? And,
yes.
Yeah, at a Cy Young level.
Yeah.
And he's trying to work his way back from injuries, whereas Romero looks to have lost it in his head.
Yeah.
And compounded by injury issues as well.
Yeah, the doing it in the major leagues thing, I mean, he had three very solid seasons. He was an opening day starter for the Blue Jays. He was an all-star.
Really bad Blue Jays team.
Right, but he
did.
You wonder who
wanted his number, you know?
Right. Maybe it's cursed.
Yeah.
And things were going in an upward trend for him. I mean, he breaks into the major leagues in 2009, has an ERA of 4.3. Good debut after kind of being a forgotten prospect because he had, I mean, this is the thing with Ricky Romero is the control issues were not a new thing for him. That was why it took him a while to get to the major leagues because he couldn't figure it out with the control. Arrives and does pretty well. Next season, ERA of 3.73. And then 2011, he's an all-star with an ERA under 3, opening day starter, and out of the major leagues just a couple of short years later. Pretty incredible stuff.
Ben, who is Preston Guillemette?
He's a guy. His name's Preston Guillemette. He's wearing 24 now.
He is wearing number 24 now.
Pretty crazy stuff. You mentioned the top five in this order, how good they could be, and maybe the best in the major leagues. I agree with that. I mean, you look at what Josh Donaldson brings to this team, and part of it is the power, part of it is the walks, part of it is just being there and being on the field. Although Jose Bautista, we've already seen our first couple of injuries of the spring is Bautista will miss today's game as well with a bit of a hamstring thing. And they'll say it's nothing. And I guess you got to take them at their word, but we've seen nothing turn into something pretty quickly. But how important is that for this team to start now banking on players who have a better injury history? Because you can't, in one respect, you can't predict injuries. There's fluky stuff that happens all the time. But on the other hand, there are guys that for whatever reason are continually injured. I mean, Carlo Koliakovo, yes, Don Cherry can talk about him not having a fat foot, but what, I don't know, how do you explain it? Guy was always injured. Brett Laurie seems to be one of those guys, John.
Yeah, I mean you can't go year after year with those guys. They just, it just throws your roster into hell too often that you can't bank on them. So, I mean, getting a guy who can play 160 games at third base for you and put up MVP-type numbers is, you know, a ridiculous offseason move. And especially a guy who, by all accounts, and this is not to say that Brett Laurie wasn't, but Josh Donaldson is great in the clubhouse as well.
Let's say Brett Laurie wasn't.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, this spring Donaldson's, you know, running around. He's, you know, busting everybody's balls. He's having a good time, you know, and then boom, he turns it on and he's super intense when the game starts. I mean, that's exactly what you need out of one of your leaders on your team is a guy who can be social and be a team leader that way when you need it and then can also perform on the field every day.
Yeah, I was down there when Donaldson first spoke to the media this spring. And, you know, I guess there was the story in Oakland that he'd had words with Billy Beane.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like the catalyst behind the trade. And
everybody has words with Billy Beane.
Yeah, and it, I mean, you know, the inference is that, you know, this guy might have character issues or personality issues or something like that. But you know what? You got nothing but a positive vibe from him on his first pass through the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, Dunedin. When you're a guy like him who is, you know, awesome in high school, awesome in college, awesome in the minors. I mean, it's when you're a young kid, it's not hard to get a big head a little bit and maybe do a couple things that rub guys the wrong way or, you know, piss off your general manager. But I mean, that doesn't mean that you're a bad guy who can't get along in a clubhouse. And, you know, if Beane and Donaldson did have their issues, I mean, that's in the past, and he's showing so far, at least early on in the spring, that he's a good guy in the clubhouse, not a bad guy.
Well, and yeah, it may be that he was highly touted and was a first round pick, sandwich pick, 48th overall in 2007. The nature of Major Leagues of Baseball is that he didn't really become a full-time player until he was 26, 27 years old, right? So he has that seasoning of riding the buses in the minor leagues for a long period of time. So maybe that helps as far as having a good head on his shoulders. Michael Saunders now, I don't know if I've ever seen the fortunes of an injury change so dramatically from one day to the next with this guy. On one day, we thought he wouldn't be back until the All-Star break. And seemingly 2 days later, now I've talked to people who were down there, and Gare, you were down there. And you were down there.
Yeah.
It seems now like people would be surprised if he doesn't break camp with this team right now. Have you ever seen anything like that? First of all, have you ever seen anybody get in an injury like what he suffered just running back to shag a fly ball, stepping on a sprinkler head?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you know, a side issue to all this is that there are a lot of people in the Jays organization not really happy with the facility that they work out of. And
that was the last time they used that field, right? They haven't used that field since.
Yeah. Well, they can put they can make it the you know, Saunders Diamond or something like that. But
yeah. Saunders Knee Memorial.
Yeah.
Diamond.
But he was, you know, he had crutches that first day, like, you know, after he came out of there. But I mean, it was like he'd gone to a faith healer or something and, you know, throw those crutches down, right? You know,
yeah.
And get slammed on the forehead. They can do miraculous things. When they said it was a 70% tear of the meniscus and that he's out till the All-Star break, the All-Star break always sounded a little long for that. And, you know, they downsized it from 70% to 60%, and you know it was constantly shifting, and it's also, I think, the team playing expectations a bit. We'll go with the absolute. We'll announce the worst case scenario at the start. The idea that he's going to be here opening day, I think that might be a stretch.
Yeah.
You know, but second week of the season, I could see.
Says he's not feeling any pain, and he apparently wanted to hit off a tee the other day. They wouldn't let him. They're holding him back. He wants to get right at it and start running and swinging the bat right now, which is unbelievable. I don't care what kind of knee surgery you're having, even if they're doing a scope that you're not feeling any pain days later.
I think that's a little irrational exuberance on his part.
Yeah, but they do need him, right? I mean, they need him to play left field. They don't need him to replace Melky's bat.
Yeah.
But they need him to play some defense out there. And, you know, if Pompey is your center fielder, he's a young guy, right? You need somebody who's got some experience in the majors helping out in outfield. And, you know, not having him around for an extended period of time, I think, will be a big issue.
Unless Kevin Pillar turns into the guy he's been throughout his entire minor league career, which he's starting to get there, especially against lefties, but still some question marks about laying off the off-speed stuff outside of the zone. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. When we come back, delve a little bit into what's gone on in the NFL, especially with the Buffalo Bills. And we talked about starting pitchers maybe being interchangeable and rushing their development because they're career spans are so short. How about the career of a running back now in the National Football League? LeSean McCoy traded for a guy who did not play in the NFL a season ago. We'll talk about that and plenty more coming up next. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce. NFL free agency on the horizon, just a couple of days away, but already seeing some pretty big trades this offseason in the NFL. Don't normally see big trades, big name players changing teams, but Brandon Marshall going to the Jets and LeSean McCoy, although he had a down year with the Eagles this year, a couple of years ago, you would have said for sure he's the most exciting running back in the NFL. He leaves the Eagles, heads to the Buffalo Bills as Chip Kelly tries to acquire all of the Oregon Ducks. Linebacker Kiko Alonso, after missing all of this season with an injury, goes to Philadelphia. So McCoy is in the backfield, so no more C.J. Spiller. He'll become a free agent, head somewhere else. Matt Cassel is going to be in camp as well as they throw another quarterback into the mix. I guess they're not giving up on E.J. Manuel. They're not handing Matt Cassel the car keys, which makes sense. He's Matt Cassel, after all. But everything we've learned about running backs and their value in recent years, Gare, does it make sense to give up a guy who could be good in Kiko Alonso?
I don't have any problem if I'm a Bills fan with the price with Alonso. I mean, if you get past the Rookie of the Year award and just look at your depth chart, I think the Bills are in pretty good stead at linebacker, and they had as good a defensive side last year as anyone in the league without him.
Already like Super Bowl quality, that defense.
Yeah, I mean, they had a rookie lead them in tackles last year, right? So, I mean, you know, Preston Brown comes in and basically, not, I wouldn't say supplants Kiko Alonso, but he does what Kiko did, maybe not quite as well, but well enough that defense can withstand the loss. So, yeah, I agree with you, Garrett. You're giving up something, but it's something you've already worked a way around, right?
If Kiko Alonso were named Fred Smith, would people care that much, right? Like, you know, you want someone named Kiko Alonso to be great, right?
Yeah, but you know that team wants to run the ball. I mean, Rex Ryan, he loves smash mouth football, and Greg Roman, the new
part of not offensive. Having a quarterback, though, either.
Well, I mean, that's why you bring in Castle. You're just looking for guys who can hand the ball off because they're going to do
that.
It like 50 times a game between McCoy and with Fred Jackson backing them up. You got your head coach and your offense coordinator both love to run. That's the game plan. And then, you know, kill the clock, run the ball, and then let your defense win you games.
You know, Spiller was so amazing to watch. You know, there was no one faster in the league. But he was a guy that would pick up, he'd hit a 100-yard game with six carries, and then the seventh, you know, he'd be limping off the field.
Right.
Like, you didn't know when it was going to happen, but you knew it was going to happen. I mean, for whatever reason, and it wasn't just one thing. It was every variety of injury. He worked his way right through the physiotherapist manual. You know what? He couldn't play for Rex Ryan. You know, the Bills had used Spiller for like 12, 15 touches or something in games, and he wasn't a really reliable receiver.
Yeah, I mean, if Rex Ryan's kind of your meat and potatoes guy, C.J. Spiller is you know, he's more like a scallop. Like, he's tastes great and looks great and everything, but
he's a filet mignon. Like, but he's delicious. He's not going to fill you up.
He's more the mignon.
Okay,
than he is the filet, though, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And a risk for food poisoning.
all right, got a couple of minutes left. And, Gare, we've got you in studio, so we've got to ask you about NHL prospects. And I can't believe it. We've gone almost 2 hours of the show without talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. So let's talk for 3 minutes about the Toronto Maple Leafs and their prospects here coming up to the June draft. Now, there's a lot to play out. They just passed the Blue Jackets yesterday as far as the draft order. it looks like the Hurricanes are catchable. Maybe not so much the bottom three. But if they do finish fifth and they get that fifth pick, one of those top five teams wins the lottery. Who do you like for them at five?
Well, I mean, in an ideal world, I would say Krause and Kingston, Lawson Krause, but I think he's going to be gone. I know the teams that are in that mix, the one team that I have pretty close contacts with, talking to them this week, were weighing number three, and they were trying to choose between Krause and Marner. So if those are the guys that you're identifying at three and four, I think that they gave the edge to Krause, and people will look at the points and say, how can you do that with Marner? Just ripping it up, being a 100-point junior player. But you know what? If you have William Nylander, I don't know that you can have Mitch Marner, who's exactly the same size, water bug type forward.
A guy whose name you never hear, and I'd be interested to know what you think, Garrett, is the Finn, Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah.
He's big. He's 210 pounds. He's 6'3 and a half or something like that. He's got a Krause-like body, and arguably people would say he's more electric with the puck. He's got better offensive skills. I mean, where does he fall into this group of kind of Strome, Marner, Krause?
I think there's a question about, funny him being a Finn, but his Finnish, right? Like, I don't know that they look at him as like a one-touch finishing type scorer.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a really dynamic skater. He's more dynamic that way than Krause is.
He looked great at WJC, right?
Yes, yeah. He did. But again, that Finnish team struggled to score, and like they were looking to him.
That's such a cliche. The Finnish guys couldn't finish.
I know.
They're looking to him, but he's a 17-year-old draft eligible. I mean, how often do those guys score? Unless your name's Connor McDavid. I mean, even Jack Eichel didn't score really at the tournament. So
yeah, but just in the run of play when he was in position, when he had chances, somehow he didn't cash them in. But yeah, you know what? I think that he would be in the mix, but I think they might look at Strome ahead of that.
My money would be on Strome. You need a center. There's no centers in this organization. You've got wingers are a lot easier to come by, but you don't have a center.
Yeah, and he's really good on faceoffs. He's got a big body. He's not quite the skater that his brother Ryan is, but. I can see it. Now, maybe some people will say he's second line upside. I think he might be better than that. He's not a finished product. He won't be playing for the team at 18, and he might not be playing for the team at 19.
But worst case for him is like Jordan Staal, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
How great would that be if the Maple Leafs had Connor Brown and Dylan Strome? They had all these Erie Otters except for the one that really matters.
They just need Dane Fox.
Connor McDavid seems like he's pretty good and stuff.
You can get Oscar Dansk, right?
Yep.
He's available.
I hope you were listening because I think we just set the record for fewest minutes devoted to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Thanks a lot for that, gents. That was tremendous. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live. Coming up, I've got Barry Davis to get you set for the Blue Jays and Phillies, a little spring action on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce on the Sportsnet Radio Network.